Golf Talk America, live from the Masters, brought to you by PXG. Nobody builds golf clubs the way we do, period. And presented by MyBookie. Let's get on with it. Golf Talk America rolls on right now.
Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And it's been a long week, and it's been an extremely long day here. Sunday night, live from Augusta, Georgia, the Masters is over, and we have a champion, Jon Rahm, as you well know. Although, Phil Mickelson tied for second place. Jordan Spieth making a run at him today. It was an exciting afternoon, or morning and afternoon, I should say, of golf here in Augusta. Frank Bassett joining you, and as you can tell, I'm a little bit hoarse, a little bit tired. It's been great weather. It's been bad weather. It's been great weather. And as Jim Nantz said today, the sun has risen on Sunday at the Masters. A little play on words. Pretty cute. I don't quote me on that. I think he said it a little differently and maybe a little better, I'm sure. But let's do this. I know that you don't want to hear me talk. You know who won. You know who were the runner-ups. You know how many live players were up on that leaderboard. And it was just, again, exciting, folks. Let's get right to it. Let's hear from the winner, and let's hear from a few more. This is going to be an uninterrupted or semi-uninterrupted. We have to pay a couple of bills, but an uninterrupted, if you will, play of the interviews after the final round of the 2023 Masters at Augusta National Golf Club.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome Phil Mickelson to the interview room. Phil, you started the day 10 shots behind the lead, and you fired a 7-under par 65 to leap into contention. This makes 10 top three finishes in the Masters, along with your three victories. Congratulations on being runner-up today.
Well, thank you. It was a fun day, and you just never know what could happen. There was 9 holes left to go when I walked off the golf course. I was 2 behind, and John played an amazing back 9. I mean, a lot can happen on that back 9. A lot of good can happen, a lot of bad, and he played some incredible golf all week long, and is a very worthy champion. He's easy to see why he's regarded as the best player in the world, and he validated that today.
John.
Phil, I think, was it in the last 24 hours, you said, there's a 65 in me. You were playing well. This was one of them. Is there more to come?
I'm hopeful that that's the case. I feel like it was evident to me that I was hitting a lot of good shots, that I was playing well, I wasn't getting the score out of it. Today was a great day for me to stay present and just keep hitting good shots. Even after I might have had a mess up here or there, I was able to stay present, keep hitting good shots, and I'm hopeful that this kind of catapults me into playing the rest of the year the way I believe I'm playing. I really worked hard in the off season to get ready. I've been shooting some really low scores at home, and today I kind of let it happen rather than trying to force it, and I had a really good day and made some noise. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough, but it was really a lot of fun for me to play at this level again, and it's encouraging for me going forward the rest of the year.
Mark.
Phil, what did you learn about yourself this week and just being back at Augusta National, a place that is special to you? How much did that help you get back in groove?
I think it's not so much what I learned, but I certainly have a lot of gratitude to be able to be here and be a part of this tournament, play well, play good golf, and try to take advantage of a unique opportunity that I have, which is to play golf at a very high level at a later stage in life, given that I haven't had any physical injuries, that I'm able to swing the club the way I want to, and then with a little bit of work and dedication to compete against some of the best players in the world in some of the biggest stages, and that's really what's driving me. And today was a very encouraging day.
Chris?
Bill, you talked before about being super present and focused this week. I'm wondering why you haven't felt that way in a while, and if you could pinpoint the last time you did.
I don't know. It's been a while since I have been able to, you know, focus the way I want to. I, obviously, Kiowa was a good week, but I mean consistently, you know, week in and week out, day in and day out. And it's starting to come. A lot of it is just things that I need to do off the golf course, too. You know, diet, exercise, and so forth, and to help with brain function and things like that. But, you know, additives in coffee is a big thing for me. I don't think things I eat on the golf course are a big thing. Like, all those things factor in. And my brother did a great job on the bag this week when my focus was kind of waning. He would tell me some stories, tell me some dad jokes, and just kind of got me refocused and more present. And again, I think that's a biggest challenge for me lately, because I feel like I'm executing a lot of shots, but I just need to be a little bit more present.
David.
Yeah, Phil, I wonder if, over, Phil, just real quickly, the clubs at 6 and 17, which were both particularly good shots.
Thank you. The shot on 6, I drove an 8-iron. It was, I think it was with the downhill playing 169, and we had a little bit of hurt, but I tried to hit a kind of a, what I call flattening the apex of an 8-iron, so it flies in flat, and it just drove in there and stuck a couple of feet, which was really nice. And then 17, I ended up hitting a 7-iron and just kind of held it a little bit in that left-to-right wind and then let it fall to the right, and it almost went in. Those were some good shots. Thank you.
Gary.
Phil, how much of this was this week? How much of this was institutional knowledge? How much of it was you finding something technically? And how much was it of you responding to this environment which you've always responded to?
I don't think it was so much technical, because I feel like I've been actually hitting shots like this for quite some time. But what was happening was a lot. Thursday was the epitome of what happened. I hit a lot of great shots. I had a chance to turn a 66, and I'd turn it into 71 because I'd make two or three loose swings. And but technically, I've been playing and performing really well, but I would just have these few lapses. And I think when you come here to Augusta, you end up having this sense of gratitude. It's hard not to. Like, this is what we strive for. And there's a kind of a calm that comes over you, the fact that we get to play and compete in this Masters. And I think we've all been very appreciative of that. And I know after missing last year, to be here this year, it means a lot to me. And it means a lot to me to be a part of this tournament going forward. I love everything about this, because it's what I dreamed of as a kid to be a part of. And I've got so many great memories wrapped up here at Augusta.
Joy.
Phil. You and your brothers have been mentor to John. Did you see a major champion or a Masters champion in him when you started talking to him first? And just tell us about what you thought of his performance over here.
My brother Tim was his college coach for 4 years there at Arizona State. The first time I played with him, we played Whisper Rock. He shot 62, and I thought I played pretty good, and he gave me a pretty good beatdown. So I am not surprised at his success. I mean, it was obvious to me at a very young age that he's one of the best players in the world, even while he was in college. And to see him on this stage is not surprising to anybody, but it's hard not to pull for John, too. You know, he's such a good guy. He's got such a great heart. He treats people so well that I think the world of him as a person, and as a player, that's obvious how good he is.
Bill, with some of the, you know, kind of blows of the last 2 years to your reputation and image, I don't know if you – do you feel like this performance over these 4 days and the fans seeming to kind of warm to you a bit again, do you feel like this is a step forward to kind of restoring some of the damage, or whatever the right word is, of the last 2 years? Yeah. And did you feel like you were carrying
separate,
the mantle?
They're separate issues. Mm-hmm. Golf and the professional golf ecosystem and how that's been handled throughout my career, two totally separate things.
Did you, one follow-up, did you feel like kind of carrying the mantle, though, for Liv, you know, with Brooks was up there and then you kind of get in contention, was there a little bit of competition with the guys from the other tour?
I wouldn't look at it like that. I'm very appreciative that we're here, that we were able to play in the majors, and I thought it was exciting that this tournament rose above it all to have the best players in the world here and lost all the pettiness. I thought that was great. I'm happy with where I'm at. I wanted something different for a lot of reasons, and I'm getting a lot out of it, because as a having a team environment. When I was in high school and college golf, it elevated my game, having players to play with, compete with. It brought a great energy and excitement, and that's what this is doing for me at LIV. I'm not saying it's for everybody, but it's been awesome for me, and I love it, and I'm excited to go play in Australia, but I don't want to – this shouldn't be – this tournament isn't about what tour you play from. There's players from all over all over the world, many different tours, and you're bringing the best players to play against each other here in the majors, and that's what it's all about, and that's what the game of golf should be. I mean, there's always going to be and should always be a place for historical events like this, but it's okay to have a little bit of different and variety in the game of golf.
Adam.
Phil, you just mentioned Australia there. As happy as you are with your performance this week, I'd imagine you don't have much time to rest. You need to get on a plane and get down to Australia next week. How rejuvenated do you think you'll be for that event down in Adelaide, and what sort of reception do you think you'll get down there?
Yeah, I mean, we're excited to go down there. There's a lot of anticipation, and we're looking forward to that. At the end of this week, I'm going to meet with some of my teammates. We're in practice together before we get on a plane and head down there, and I'm looking forward to that. I also feel like this is a great week to kind of give me a boost, give me some confidence, give me some momentum to start playing and competing at a high level with my teammates. I'm really looking forward to that too. And so having a mixture of this style of golf, old, traditional, historical majors, and then have something a little bit different and a different energy and vibe, like it's been great for me. I love the variety.
Bill, you've played the new 13th now four times. What's your view of it?
Yeah, I think it played kind of the way they wanted it to. I think it played the way they wanted it to. So, you know, we were hitting a lot longer shots in. Probably could extend the tee a little bit for days like yesterday when it's wet and into the wind, and you would still have an option to maybe go for it, because I think just about everybody had to lay up. But you don't really need to do anything different. I think it played the way it was intended.
Don't sound as though you liked it, though.
I'm not saying whether I like it or not. I mean, I think it's playing the way they intended it to play. I mean, I like going for that hole. I just couldn't reach it this morning when it was, you know, into the wind and wet. And I liked having a chance to kind of go for it. I think it's what makes that hole so exciting is that risk-reward opportunity. And when it's taken away, nobody really likes that. But it was only taken away one of the four rounds, I thought. And so I thought it played pretty good. I mean, kind of the way they wanted it.
Robert.
Bill, do you sort of rue the 75 at this point, or is it just that was a, you know, the conditions were so difficult that, you know, obviously your last nine holes were some of the toughest out there of the week?
I mean, I could look back on this and look back on two or three swings that would have made all the difference at different stages in the tournament. And this morning was one of those things. I just couldn't get it in the hole. I hit a great shot on a 13, had an 7-8 footer, and didn't make it. And great shot on 16, 6-7 feet, and didn't make it. And so there were sometimes you get in those moments where it's just not quite. You're not quite connecting with the target, and you're not quite getting the ball to go in or where you want it. And then it flips. Somehow you just kind of it flips like it did later today. So I don't know what I could have done differently, other than, you know, have the ball go a little bit more in the hole. I mean, I thought, so I don't know what I would have done differently there. In the first round, there's some swings that I can identify and say that really hurt.
Just two more questions. Jay?
Bill, right here. Did you feel any different coming down Magnolia Lane this year than you have in years past?
I would say it would be the same. I get the same feeling every time I drive down, you know, that same feeling of excitement and history and tradition and everything that kind of goes through your mind when you're driving down Magnolia Lane and playing Augusta National. And it doesn't matter if I'm playing in the tournament or if I'm playing a practice round, I get the same feeling every time I come to this place. And I think we all sense what a spiritual place Augusta National is for those of us who love the game of golf.
And one more thing. Are you going to play in the PGA Championship?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
In the back, David.
Hi, Phil. First of all, I'm from China. English is not my mother tongue. So if I say something that might be offending, I hope you...
Did you go to Stanford by any chance? You have that sweatshirt?
No, I got a, you know,
somebody gave you that sweatshirt?
Who went to Stanford.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, all right.
Nice.
I met you, actually. Oh, okay, my question is on behalf... I'm not a pro-media guy. It's on behalf of fans from China. We're just curious about... A couple months ago, there was a joke about... From you, about, you know, a match, possible match between the PGA Tour and the LIV guys, like you, all right? You said, we're going to finish them right away. And is that kind of a joke, or
it was just
you really
joke,
mean
yeah.
it?
Yeah, I was just trying to be funny.
Okay, thank you. And congratulations on this fabulous finish.
Thank you.
You're amazing out there. Thank you.
Thank you.
One more question, Ann.
Hey, Phil. Can you talk about the key to your longevity and staying injury-free?
I would give a lot of credit to Sean Cochran, who's been the trainer for 20 years. When we started working together, the idea was to elongate my career rather than to bulk up and try to hit it farther. We've added a physical therapist with Gino Cinco, and I've been working on maintaining flexibility and all that stuff. But also, when I turned 40 and got psoriatic arthritis, I had to change my diet and become accountable for my overall health and wellness. And so that's where the whole coffee thing started. I never drank coffee until then and didn't realize, you know, what a great way of antioxidants intake that is and all of that stuff. So I had to be much more accountable to my overall health and wellness off the golf course, as well as maintaining strength and flexibility. So it's been a combination of those things. But the mindset in fitness and training is not to bulk up and get big muscles, but it's to create elasticity and flexibility.
Well, Phil, with a 31 on the second nine and a 65 today, it was certainly working.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Happy Easter.
Hey, folks. Golf Talk America is off and running at the 2023 Masters. And guess who we're off and running with? We're off and running with MyBookie, your one-stop shop for all your betting needs. You got to take advantage of the crazy boosted odds via the MyBookie money bag with a chance to lock in top-seeded talent at long shot odds. Key, long shot odds. Go to mybookie.com/golftalkamerica. That's mybookie.website/golftalkamerica. And be sure to use our promo code. It's Golf Talk. Got to have that because we got to get paid too, because we're going to bet with MyBookie as we have in the past. We absolutely love them. It's the only online sports book that makes you feel like you just hit the sweet spot on that three wood that you take the money out of your best friend's back pocket with in and out every week. You bet, you win, and they pay, and they pay. Getting started simple. So here's what you do. You go to mybookie.website/golftalk and use promo code GOLFTALK to secure a first deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's pretty darn simple. It's simple to deposit $200 and play with $300 instantly. So just use promo code GOLFTALK and claim your bonus. Whether you're a diehard or a casual fan, simply put, there's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting with MyBookie. Remember, that's mybookie.website/golftalkamerica and use promo code GOLFTALK. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome Brooks Koepka to the media room. Brooks, not the result that you wanted today. Nevertheless, I think on behalf of all of us, we'd like to congratulate you on a wonderful tournament, a wonderful week. Clubhouse leader, round one, round two, round three. But Brooks, could you share some of the emotions that you felt during the last round, particularly the last nine holes today?
Yeah, obviously it's super disappointing, right? Didn't play good enough to win. Hit some shots where I also didn't feel like I got some good breaks. I mean, for that ball to sit there on nine, on 4-6, hit some good shots. He just ended up in some terrible spots, where it was quite difficult. And then, 12, it was just kind of interesting. John hit 9, and I hit wedge over the green. So, and then 14, I felt like I just had to make a run for it. So, didn't feel like I did too much wrong, but that's how golf goes sometimes.
Sean.
Brooks, you're a pretty fast player, as we know. Just curious your thoughts on the pace of play this afternoon.
Yeah, that group in front of us was brutally slow. I mean, I don't think – I mean, John went to the bathroom like 7 times during the round, and we were still waiting. So,
Gary.
Brooks, when the lead became a deficit, what, if anything, changed with your game plan?
I think it was just be patient probably till about 13, and then we had to be a little bit more aggressive. I let probably 9 stick on me for a little bit longer than it should have, because if that ball just dribbles on the green, it's tight. And then a good momentum putt there at 10, but it is what it is. I mean, I tried. I gave it my all, so I can go to sleep at night.
James.
Did anything feel different today, Brooks, than the last 3 days?
Not really. I think it felt the same. I felt like I was striking the ball pretty well. Poor tee shot on 1, but got lucky. And then, poor tee shot on 8, which is a big birdie hole. And I felt like that's kind of where the momentum shifted right there in 8 and 9 is what it felt like.
And obviously not the result you wanted, but how do you think about this year compared to last year?
Well, I'm healthy, so it's completely different, right? I just chalked those two up to, I mean, you've seen it. If somebody's not healthy, they can't compete. So I just kind of washed those 2 years in my head.
James.
What's the shot on 6? I'm just curious. Were you surprised that it flew the green that far? And what type of shot? What is the second shot there?
Yeah, I think John hit 7-iron, and he came up short. And I'm about a half club longer than him with the irons. So, and I hit a 3/4 7, and it went over. If it was on the upslope, it would have been a lot easier, but the ball was sitting on the downslope, and it, for whatever reason, just kind of skidded when it – I thought I hit a pretty good pitch, just skidded. And I was fortunate enough just to stay up, but I felt like right there that was kind of frustrating.
Mark.
Brooks, I know you probably won't like the live questions, but – with you at the top, near the top, and Phil up there, and Patrick near the top 10, I mean, what do you guys think you proved this week about the quality of play on that circuit?
Nobody. I mean, we're still the same people. I mean, I know if I'm healthy, I know I can compete. I don't think any of the guys that played this event thought otherwise either. When Phil plays good, they know he's going to compete. B. Reed, same thing. I think that's just manufactured by the media, that we can't compete anymore. We were washed up.
Any other questions, ladies and gentlemen?
Hey, Brooks, following up on what you just said, you played well, Phil played well. From a fan's perspective, what do you hope this tournament and this showing does for the sport?
Well, I think it's the best tournament in the world. And I think everybody put on a pretty good display. Phil, what did he shoot today? 7-under. That's pretty impressive. Spieth, 6. P. Reed, 4. Cameron Young, 4. I think me and Vic were the only ones to shoot over par. But, I mean, the way John played today was pretty impressive. And I think, I don't know, the game's just very, it's so good right now, everybody. It's amazing to see all these guys compete when they're at their best. They're all tough to beat.
If I can follow up, do you hope this tournament and the proof of play from both sides shrinks the divide?
Repeat it, sorry.
Do you hope from the performance of everyone, both in LIV Golf and the PGA Tour, that this shrinks the fracture in sport, in the sport, and make from a fan's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it is kind of fractured just from the fans' perspective. But as far as us, I mean, I think everybody saw it this week. It's nice to see everybody. There's no hard feelings pretty much, and I think that's the way everybody should see it.
Sean.
Brooks, it felt like most of the misses were left for you, and unless that's wrong, what do you think was leading to that?
I just towed it off one, trying to hold it. So that's probably never good. And then eight, I guess, was left. And then it was 17. So, yeah, I guess they were. I don't know, man. If I knew, I would have fixed it out there.
Brantley.
Brooks, when you look at guys like Taylor Gooch and Harold and how world rankings might be their only pathway back into these majors, what do you think has to change to ensure that the majors do have all the best players in the world?
I don't know. That's not up to me, man. That's a tough one. I don't know how – I mean, yeah, that's tough. I have no idea how they're going to do it. It definitely makes it more difficult, that's for sure.
Sean.
Brooks, you've finished second before in majors that you've been near the top. Is it hard to view them as a positive when it comes after a day like today?
Probably not today, probably not for the next few days, but eventually it will be a positive. I'd say probably give it a week, and I'll start to see some positives out of it and carry this over the PGA, U.S. Open, and the Open. But right now it's kind of tough to see, if I'm honest, and probably for the next few hours and in the next few days.
Last question, Evan.
Just along those lines, Brooks, what positives could you take out of it going into the next three majors? Do you feel like you're back now that you're healthy, you can win majors again?
Yeah, I mean, I think I proved it this week, no?
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
I mean, I've known this for a while, but I guess it was just about going out and doing it and led for three rounds and just – didn't do it on the last day. That's it. Plain and simple.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, a sign off. Thanks again, Brooks, for a tremendous tournament. We've appreciated all your questions and answers in the media room too. So thanks for your time.
BXG will stop at nothing to create the world's finest golf equipment. Their new Gen 6 golf clubs deliver blazing fast ball speed, outstanding distance, and breathtaking forgiveness. But it doesn't stop there. BXG's high-performance men's and women's apparel will elevate your game with lightweight, high-tech fabrics. And now you can tee it up with BXG's brand new Extreme Golf Balls, bringing you big distance, snappy green grabbing control, and a slick alignment aid to help you sink more putts. Find it all at pxg.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's my privilege to welcome our 2023 Masters champion, John Rahm. John, congratulations on your victory. 40 years after Seve's second victory, and on his birthday, you've become the fourth Spaniard to win the green jacket. Can you walk us through your emotions the moment you sealed the victory?
Hard to put it into words. Obviously, we all dream of things like this as players, and you try to visualize what it's going to be like and what it's going to feel like. And when I hit that third shot on the green, and I could tell it was close by the crowd's reaction, just a wave of emotion of so many things just overtook me. Never thought I was going to cry by winning a golf tournament, but I got very close on that 18th hole. And a lot of it because of what it means to me and to Spanish golf, right? It's Spain's 10th major for a player to win the Masters, fourth. And my second win, right? My second major win. It's pretty incredible. And to play the way I did today on Sunday, only one bogey, you know, on difficult conditions and coming in with a margin, hard to explain. You know, a lot of pride, and I'm really proud of myself from what I did. And still really hasn't sinked in yet. And I'm looking at this course and I'm still thinking I have a couple more holes left to win. And can't really say anything else. You know, this one was for Seve. I know he was up there helping, and help he did.
Thank you. We'll go to questions. Gary.
John, everybody in this room knows, but on Tuesday, you shared your appetite for the history of this game and talked about how you like to peel back layers on what other players have done. In addition to the Spanish accomplishment, you're the first European player ever to win a Masters and a U.S. Open. So can you give us a sense, Masters and a U.S. Open, no other European player has done that. So... Can you just share, finding that out, just some perspective on that accomplishment?
I find it hard to believe that I'm the first one. You know, if there's anything better than accomplishing something like this, is making history. So the fact that you tell me that, to be the first ever to do, first European ever to do that, hard to explain. Out of all the accomplishments and the many great players that have come before me, to be the first to do something like that, it's a very humbling feeling. Thank you, by the way, because I don't know how I would have found out. I still can't believe I'm the first. I don't know what to tell you. It is a pretty good duo of majors. The, you know, U.S. Open is about as hard a test that you're ever going to find, and you know, I was starting to think I was never going to win a major again unless it was at Torrey Pines. So to come somewhere that, it's not like it was that long ago, but to come somewhere where I've been comfortable, you know, I kept seeing the stats of lowest score to par the last starts and, you know, how great I've done here in the past, but never really gave myself a chance to win. And all I asked for was a chance, and I got it. So to get that done is, I can't hope to feel anything but thankful.
John.
John, just a few minutes ago, Jose Maria talked about how proud he was of how calm, cool, and collected you seemed out there today. How calm, cool, and collected were you?
What is going on the outside is not always a reflection of the inside. I was calm. I never got frustrated. I never really felt like anything was out of control, but obviously you're nervous, right? There's tension out there. That bogey on 9, timing-wise, was bad because Jordan and Phil came in making birdies, right? So what looked like a 2, possibly more shot lead, narrowed down very, very quickly with the chance of making a birdie on 18, right? So made those 10, 11, 12 holes harder. Again, I might have looked calm, but I was definitely nervous out there, and I'm glad that's the way it looked. I mean, that's what you strive for, right? You don't want to panic, and I never panicked. I felt comfortable with my game, and I had a plan to execute, and that's all I can do.
Cameron.
John, you had the 4-putt at the first hole. You might have got the worst and the probably the tougher side of the draw. You were getting rained on. You were also behind for a lot of the holes. Did you have a sense of calm throughout the week, or how did you sort of keep your composure?
Did you say I was perhaps was on the bad side of the draw? Perhaps. You know, the only time I was a little bit upset at myself was actually this morning on 16. Because 3-putt at 13, 3-putt at 15, and then I hit a terrible shot on 16 and made a bogey. And I felt like at least one of those shots was avoidable. That's the only time I ever felt like, you know, I was truly upset at something. But I, you know, I reeled it back in and made 2 good pars in the last 2 holes to put myself in the final group, which is all I needed. That's all I asked for was a chance. It was a tough day out there. It was windy, and all those wind gusts and swirls are not easy. You're going to hit good shots, or you're going to end up in bad spots. And it happened to everybody. So luckily the people that shot a low round today were a little bit too far out. And as to, because I know you guys keep asking me, as to why I felt this way, I really don't know. I've always been confident when having close to the lead. I have full faith in all parts of my game. And maybe because it was that difficult out there, I was just focused on what I had to do. And that's really all you can control, is what you can do.
Jeff.
John, a year ago you played the final round with Tiger Woods. Was there anything from that day that you were able to use today? And then perhaps specifically you could talk about how you approached the 12th hole today in the final round.
Well, I think because he, even though he didn't try to show it, obviously he was in pain, he was tired. The fourth round was a long one for him. I didn't really want to just grill him with questions about tournaments, right, and how to be a better golfer, because he was there to do a job. We shared a couple of fun stories. I asked him a couple of questions about, you know, when he was a younger player and when he became a dad, and more about, you know, life as a pro athlete and parenthood. I think we talked about that more than anything. Then he shared a couple of stories from the past. But the one thing I remember is talking to Tony Finau. I played 9 holes with him on Wednesday, about 12, because you mentioned. And I asked him when him and Francesco hit those shots in the water, it was like, did you actually hit a good shot? And he said, yeah, it was a good shot. It was just a yard too far right and spun in the water. So then he mentioned that Tiger's shot went left of the bunker to that Sunday pin. So when I got there today, dry land is mission number one, right? And then it was very similar conditions to what we played this morning. So I learned from what I did this morning, tried to basically make a hole-in-one to the third round pin and hit a perfect shot because I was about 3 feet from it, right? That's all I had to do, hit it right over the center of the bunker and hope it hits green. So, and then after that, hit a great lag putt, tapped it in, and moved on.
Jeffrey.
A lot of people want to describe you as a fighter. Where does that come from?
I don't know. Maybe it's a little bit related to determination. You know, I'm out there. When I'm out there, I have a job to do, and it's to hopefully be here answering to this question, right? So I know we all do, but we put in a lot of effort to try to beat the best guys in the world. So maybe that level of intensity and that determination is what you see, and that's why I'm characterized as a fighter. I'm also never going to give up, no matter what, right? If I can, even if I shoot myself out of contention, whatever, and I can finish strong to give myself a possibility to finish fourth, it's always going to be better than anything, right? So I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I didn't try my hardest in every shot. So that's maybe why where it comes from.
Don.
John, can you remember the moment where you first thought that you'd like to win this tournament, and how have you changed from that day until now?
Oh, God, I can't remember exactly when. But, I mean, I've wanted to win it ever since I thought about golf and what being a champion would be, right? Obviously, there's 4 great tournaments we all think of, and not to categorize them in any order, right? This one is one of them. I think the main thing, something that gave me a lot of hope, and that kind of started when Sergio won on 17, is the fact that basically pretty much every great named Spanish player had won here, right? I was like, there's got to be something here about having a Spanish passport. I don't know. There's something about the grounds that transmits into all of us, and even that year, I play good every year. I can't pinpoint exactly the first time, but it really became clear to me that year.
Martin.
John, how exciting is it to be halfway towards the Grand Slam and be in a race now with Jordan Spieth and Rory and perhaps even Phil?
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. You know, there are 3 of them. I mean, it would be amazing. It would be great. It's not many people have been able to do it, and to be able to finish it out and close out and do a Grand Slam would be absolutely amazing. I don't know how else to say. I would like to say that I entered the race when I won the U.S. Open, but of course it was so far away you didn't want to think about it, right? But as players, it's on your mind, right? It's on your mind. It's something that it would be amazing, but it's a long road ahead to be able to accomplish that. Something that two players like Phil and Arnie weren't able to do, you know, it speaks a lot.
Scott.
John, you started the week with a double bogey, and this morning you woke up with a four-shot deficit that you quickly made two, and then within a few holes today you were tied for the lead with one birdie. How do you switch from chasing all week to being chased for the last 12 holes?
It really doesn't change. Not as much as you should, obviously. I like to still stay aggressive, as it shows with my play on 16. The second I try to play for pars is when I think a big number comes into play, right? So with how good I was swinging, I like to stay aggressive. And if I have a three-shot lead, try to make it four. If you're four, try to make it five. That's a goal, right? That's the intention. Just so you can go on 18 and mess up and still have a pretty good look at winning the tournament, kind of like I almost did today, like Scotty did last year, right? You want to have as much lead as you can. The goal at that point is to never come back to the rest of the field, right? To have them chase you. And knowing that if I could make a few birdies and pars, especially on the back nine, it was going to be pretty difficult for someone to catch up with the wind conditions today.
Dylan.
Yeah, John, when you're playing in the same group as the guy that you know you're competing with, is there anything you try to do to gain a competitive advantage? Obviously, it's not match play, but you and Brooks were side by side for a lot of holes today.
It's not match play, but early on it kind of felt like it, right? Before people made all those birdies, I mean, we were 10-11. After the birdie on 3, 10-11 under, and then the closest was 5 under, right? So it kind of felt like that situation where I wasn't expecting Brooks to play bad. I can't expect that, right? So I need to bring the fight to him. So when I took the tee on 4, the goal is to keep giving him something to look at, meaning if I hit a good shot, just for him to see that I have a birdie chance, but keep putting the ball in the fairway and keep making good swings for him to feel more of the pressure than me, right? Me to be the one pushing. And I feel like I did that really, really well. And even at the end, when things changed, he was the one that started pushing and made those birdies on 15 and 16, right? So even at that point, the dynamic changed a little bit as well.
Adam.
When did you figure out, or did someone tell you, that the final round of the Masters this year was going to be on Seve's birthday?
I think it was on Tuesday right here. Not in the press room, but I think it was while I was doing media that it was Seve's birthday. Yeah. I was told a lot of things about why this could be the year, and I just didn't want to buy into it too much.
Or if you don't mind, did you sense today that the patrons were more behind you than in past years?
Not throughout the entire round, because obviously early on there was a lot of options and Brooks was on the lead and the people supporting Brooks made themselves known. But I think it was around my birdie on 8 when I took a couple stroke lead is when things turned a little bit. Even with that bogey on 9, the support was pretty incredible all throughout. And I kept hearing, Seve, 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 do it for Seve. I heard that the entire back 9. And that might have been the hardest thing to control today is, you know, the emotion of knowing what it could be if I were to win. That might have been the hardest thing.
Phil.
John, we really should ask you about the fantastic shot into 14, but shall we ask you about the shot, tee shot on 18 instead? Can you just describe what you were thinking as you reached for a provisional ball on the 72nd hole?
Nothing really. Had a 4-shot lead, so I was confident with that. I think that was karma. I was just telling Adam how great I hit a low fade the entire week. It pretty much every the fairway, all 4 days on 17, which I've never done. And I was bragging about it a little bit. And, of course, on 18, that happens, right, which was maybe 2 feet from missing that tree. But it'll be a good story in the future, I guess, right? I won the Masters. Didn't even make it to the fairway on the 18th tee shot. I much rather want to remember that second shot on 14, because if there was a key moment throughout the day, it was that shot, right? Not stymied behind the tree, but not in the great spot to hit it to 4 feet was incredible.
And sorry, what was the yardage you had in on 18?
128 on 18?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 14. I don't even know. Adam started saying numbers. I was like, is it worth going for the green? No. So I just grabbed the 4-iron and faded around the tree into a pitch spot.
Just a couple more questions, Kevin. Or Doug.
No, I'm sorry. John, I actually did want to ask you about the yardage on 14 and what club that was. Sorry.
No, I figured somebody was going to ask. It was 128 meters adjusted, and I used an 8-iron. And it was, started around left edge of the green. All I had to do was fade about 5 yards, and he would reach that slope.
You talk about Eamon Cornrup. When you leave 14 with that great birdie and you're four up with four to play, does that become easy or difficult?
Doesn't make it easier or more difficult. At the end, I still wanted to play those last four holes under par. That was the goal, knowing that if I did that, it was going to be pretty much not impossible, but very difficult for me to lose it.
And last question in English.
A couple years ago, sorry, right here, down front.
Sorry.
Okay. A couple years ago, you made a decision to reveal a pretty vulnerable thing, that you were born with a club foot. And I was kind of curious what made you want to share that with people. What inspired the explanation of that?
Oh, it's not a vulnerable thing. You can't see it because I wear pants. If we wore shorts in golf, you guys would have noticed way earlier. I dropped hints as a professional in these pressers many times. And it was in the 2020 Open Championship when somebody finally decided to ask a follow-up question to that and ask me what I meant. And that's when I explained it to it. I mean, I'm not going to go out here and explain everything that goes on, right? So that was it. Somebody finally asked a follow-up question, and I decided to talk about it. Nothing else. It wasn't like a moment where I felt ready. It's something I'm pretty open about. It's the reason why I have the swing I have and the mechanics I have is part of who I am.
And a few questions in Spanish. Juan.
Primero, que nos describas un poco las emociones del día, ¿no? Y en qué momentos has sentido que eran clave y que te ibas a poner la chaqueta, ¿no?
¿En qué momento he sentido?
Sí.
Hombre, no me quería adelantar, ¿no? Pero cuando he pegado el tercer golpe del 18 cerca de bandera, que sabía que estaba cerca de ella, he dejado que mi mente se fuese a ese, digamos, a esa zona, ¿no? Casi me pasa en el 17, 4 golpes de ventaja y tal, pero luego le pego al árbol. pero ya no quería, digamos, creérmelo hasta que ya era algo fijo. Y esto viene de, no solo de deportista y de estar ahí en esa situación, ¿no? Me acuerdo leyendo el libro de Rafa Nadal, cuando habla de esa final de 2008 de Wimbledon con Federer, que pega un gran golpe, no sé si lo dices, de golpe en tenis, que le puso un punto arriba en el tiebreak. Dice que es la primera vez que se dejó pensar en la victoria, creo que era el cuarto set, y luego perdió los dos o tres siguientes puntos y fue a un quinto set, ¿no? Y explica cómo el permitirse pensar en la victoria es lo que le hizo perder ese set. Y hay pensamientos de ganar que van a venir a la mente, pero lo que no hay que hacer es perderse en ellos y mantenerse en lo que es importante en el momento.
Ignacio.
John here.
In Spanish? Or
yeah, Spanish. El Masters entrega cosas muy importantes que permanecen en la vida. El saco, venir a la cena de campeones, venir a jugar durante toda tu vida golfista el Masters. Esas cosas ya están empezando a pesar en tu mente ahora, todo lo que eso significa.
No, ni cerca de haberlo procesado todavía. Lo único que sé que va a pasar, porque se lo prometí, es que el cocinero José Andrés me va a abrazar con el menú todo el año. Es lo único que te puedo prometer que eso va a pasar. El resto no, todavía no. Digamos, no he dejado que la mente o los pensamientos vayan tan adelante, ¿no? Más que nada porque hay veces que me cuesta salir de ese modo de competición, ¿no? Que sigo pensando que hay algo más que hacer para ganar. Así que me imagino que esta tarde, mañana, algún día de estos vendrá presente, ¿no? Pero de momento no. Es casi como que no me doy cuenta, no sé, es algo extraño, no sé cómo explicarlo, pero un honor el poder venir aquí el resto de mi vida y un honor el año que viene poder darles una buena cena en el norte de España, una buena zona vasca, que bueno, que José Andrés me ayudará con ello, me imagino.
And one more from Juan in Spanish.
Sí. So, la importancia histórica para España y para Europa que tiene esto y pues eso, y si te das la cuenta ya de lo que significa, ¿no?
Hombre, el décimo grande de España, ¿no? Y la quinta chaqueta. ¿Sexta? No, Seve ganó, es verdad. Sí, sexta. Sexta, coño. La sexta, es que ya ando perdido. La sexta. Pues qué decir, es que no sé, me cuesta explicarlo porque verle a ganar a Sergio fue increíble, ¿no? Y eso hace como español que vengas y de verdad te creas que aquí hay algo especial para españoles, ¿no? Que es nuestro destino poder jugar aquí bien. Y el hecho de que los tres grandes jugadores antes de mí hayan conseguido ganar, ¿no? Y yo a tan, digamos, temprana edad he conseguido ganarlo, es todo un honor. Y ojalá pueda añadir más y ojalá pueda seguir añadiendo. Y eso de ser el primer europeo que gana el Masters y el US Open, todavía no me lo creo. Eso te lo puedo decir. Me cuesta creer que sea yo el primero. Y la verdad que eso es todo un honor.
And before we conclude, if you could go through your scorecard in terms of birdies and bogeys and the clubs that you hit in and distances for the birdies and bogeys.
Every hole?
No, just the birdies and bogeys. Looks like.
Oh, sorry, the birdies. So three. Every round?
No, just the final.
Okay, so birdie on three. It was driver, had 43 meters to the pin. Used the lob wedge. Landed two paces short, released six. How much detail do I need to get into?
No, that's good.
Okay. Eight. Driver, three wood into a hurricane. Had 51 meters to the pin and used the lob wedge, hit a low runner. 13, driver 6 iron to pin high just left of the green. Decided to pitch it and gave myself a pretty good look at birdie from 4 feet. And then 14, 128 meters, 8 iron around the tree, pin high.
Great. Well, John, congratulations. Thank you for being with us, and what an incredible accomplishment.
Thank you. Great.
So there you have it, the interviews, and we are done for 2023 at the Masters. It, again, was exciting, folks. Thank you all for listening. We'll be right back with you with the RBC next week. I am out of here from Augusta and on my way back to Nashville. Won't be at the RBC, but we will be bringing you interviews from the Media Center, and it is a designated event, so it's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks again to our special sponsors, MyBookie, and our sponsor and exclusive club provider for me, that is, of Golf Talk America, that would be PXG. Nobody builds golf clubs the way we do, period. Check out PXG's new Gen 6s. They are incredible. For Tim Matthews, Frank Bassett, myself, the Golf Talk America Network team, producers, and our people who just keep it all together, thanks again, and take care, everybody.